Hi, I'm Commander Shepard, and Spawn on Me podcast is my favorite podcast on the Citadel. I should go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Spawn on Me podcast, episode 212. 212. And this melodic voice that you hear right now is the one and only, the great Stubnosticator, Stubby Stan, a.k.a. Caesus, a.k.a. the Bruce Wayne of Bricago, also known as his government, Cicero Holmes. And I am joined this week and every week with my brolic brother from a little bit up north, the one who makes froze look good. He makes math looks good. He makes kids look good as he's tutoring them. He is the one and only Mr. Sharif Jackson of SharifJackson.com. How are you today, sir?
What's the dealio? Hey, everybody. I'm doing very well. And I noticed, apparently, have you abdicated the throne of the Baron of Bourbon?
I am still.
I don't hear you mention it, though.
I am still the Baron of Bourbon. Okay. I was waiting because just it's been, sure. You know, I feel like it's been a while since I've been back in Bricago. I've been back home in Bricago. So I was waiting to let people know that today's bourbon is the one and only Buffalo Trace of the Buffalo Trace Distillery, one of the best distilleries of the finest of bourbons.
Oh, word?
Okay. Buffalo Trace, yes. Buffalo Trace makes my very favorite bourbon, the one and only Blanton's. Very, very difficult to get nowadays. And they make the holy grail of bourbons, Pappy Van Winkle, which is like, if you can find a bottle, is like $1,500 to $2,000 a bottle.
What? Are you kidding me?
Yes. Yours truly has had some Pappy Van Winkle. It's pretty damn good.
I mean, did you trade in your car for it? Like, what happened?
No. You know, so, yeah, I was over at my mom's house for Thanksgiving. We went to a friend's house, and we went over there, and he was like, oh, hey, you know, can I get you a drink or something? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, you know, I've got this, I got this, I got bourbon. I said, oh, you have me a bourbon? And he was like, yeah, I got, you know, I got some Makers, because we're down in Louisville. So Makers, like, it runs out of the tap. So he's like, yeah, we've got some Makers. I've got some of this. I've got some of this. It's like, yeah, I've got this Pappy Van Winkle that a guy that did some work for my house. He used to work at the distillery and he just had some. And it was in like a plastic jug, like a plastic fifth of like, you know, old school bum Seagram's gin or something like that. And he you know, he took that and poured Pappy in there and just wrote the year on it. 2012 Pappies.
Wow.
And yeah, man, he was like, I don't even drink this stuff. Like, I'll mix it with Coke. So he was like, yeah, have a good time. So I had a good time with that Pappies, y'all.
Holy crap. I feel like, aside from the fact that Pappy Van Winkle sounds like someone that would have like voted for George Wallace and Strom Thurmond.
Yes.
You know, I just hope that you weren't literally drinking liquid racism. Like, that's my hope.
That you weren't, yeah, I mean, listen,
drinking straight oppression in your butt.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I try not to think about it. Bourbon comes from the South. I just think anything that comes from the South is synonymous with racism and oppression.
Anything? So.
There's, no, not anything.
We have a lot of listeners. We have listeners from the South, man.
Right. Well, hey, look, they could probably co-sign what I'm saying. So I'm just saying that sometimes when the toilet flushes, it whistles Dixie in South Carolina. So, you know, I know that for a fact. In fact, the Citadel, one of the great institutions of Charleston, South Carolina, just stopped maybe 10, 15 years ago playing Dixie after the national anthem.
Wow.
For all of their sporting events.
You serious?
Yes. So you had like black athletes standing on the sidelines or on the side of the court or whatever, after the national anthem played, they played Dixie. And you know, you just had to stand there and take it.
Wow. So. I mean, I guess that's why, like, Commander Shepard said, yeah, we got to launch a Citadel into space.
Yes.
This shit is crazy.
This shit is crazy.
So that's why they launched it into space and said, we got to get this shit off the planet.
Y'all out here wilding. Oh, my God. So, while they're out there wilding, who wasn't wilding was y'all last week. What a great show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'm sorry that I wasn't there. But you know, my three siblings, y'all take care of the ship, and it was really dope to listen to y'all. Just kind of listen and be a fan. I kind of like that.
It was a really fun show, though. I'm so mad at Ka for not naming the show Black Ops. I don't know how he would have spelled it. But when I re-listened to the show, like, you know, it's always different when you listen to shows based. It's always different from, like, when you're on them. And it was just so funny. I couldn't stop laughing every time he did that. I was like, yo, that should have been the name of the show.
Yes. Well, so, you know, sometimes we can't help what we do. If you name the show beforehand, you don't know what you're going to get when you actually are in the show, because these events are not scripted. Everyone, we're not reading off teleprompters. We're live. We're fantastic. We do it the best ad libs, the best improvisation. We're stupendous, bigly. What else is stupendous, bigly, besides the fact that the Team Mueller has finally started subpoenaing the Trump organization, is the fact that games are really starting to come into play and we can start talking about games that we're playing. So, Reef, I know you and Tanya are really, like, you guys are like the vanguards. You are the paladins of going out and finding great games to play. So, Reef, what are you playing right now?
Well, I'll say the one game that I'm still inching through, and it's funny because I thought I would have been done by now, but the game is really a lot deeper and just has, like, I feel like it's just never going to end, and not in a bad way, is Night in the Woods. This really, really fantastic indie title about a character named May that essentially returns to her sort of mining neighborhood that is totally like a Trump neighborhood where, like, you know, like, everybody's out of work and she's like a college dropout. And it's just you reconnecting with your friends there, going on different adventures. But it's just, I thought it would be kind of like a couple of hours and a great experience, but I've been going on multiple hours because there's so many side characters and different side quests that you can go on, and they're all, like, super rewarding. And as I've been streaming the game, a lot of people, thank God, have not been, like, backseat kind of gaming, but they have been, like, after I do something, they'll share how, like, they did it or what the devs have like said that their, like, intention for different scenes were, because, like, the game is, like, I don't know, I think it came out last summer, so it's definitely been out for like a little while, it's just so, like, I don't want it to end, man. I don't want it to
yeah.
end. It
yeah.
is so good. I recommend everybody pick it up. It's like $20. It's on Xbox, PS4, PC, right. Switch. You know what I'm saying? It's just a fantastic, fantastic game. And now I understand why it was on so many people's, like, top 10 games of the year. Because even though it's small, kind of weird indie title, it absolutely has had an impact on me almost like no other game. Because it really is about, like, you know, like, you're going to Trump country and you're identifying with, you know, with this town that used to identify itself as like mining, and like now there was like a big flood, and like you're dealing with like the frustrations of like people and the happiness and the success. You get in this argument with your mother that was like so fucking real and almost triggering for me, really, because like you get in this really like, you know, it's like those arguments that like you would have as a teenager with your parents, where like you would be where like you would be like, you know, like I hate living in this house, I hate you, and you slam, and you slam your door, you know.
Right.
Like there's one of those moments, and I felt myself getting worked up because I had identified with both the mom and May so much. So, man, what a fantastic game. I literally would recommend it to like anyone.
I haven't played it yet.
Incredible.
Yeah.
You know, it's and for like a $20, you just can't beat it. You just cannot beat it. Cannot beat it. Well,
I mean, there you go. There you go. I mean, that's fantastic. I haven't had a chance to play it yet. I've really been kind of slacking. I've been, I've been playing the game of work.
Is that like Tetris, basically?
Right. Yeah. It is. Yeah. It is. It is on. It is on New Game Plus, nice. And it is kicking. It is kicking my ass. So yeah. So I've been logging extra hours of work. So that is.
Look, this is why you got to get that Switch, man.
Yeah.
Got to get that Switch, and then take that bathroom break.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And,
right.
And like knock out some games.
Yeah. And maybe I can. Maybe I can, you know, while I'm sitting on the corner of happy and healthy. So I guess that's not our slogan anymore. But, you know, that's okay. So I have been playing when I am not playing work. I have been diving back into kind of apropos as we celebrate the homegoing of two monumental figures in our lives. The one and only Amityville's own Mr. Craig Mack, who was just like Uniblab, and the great physicist, Dr. Stephen Hawking. Mm-hmm. I have been diving deep into the Milky Way galaxy in one of my favorite games in this generation, Frontier Development's Elite Dangerous. They, as I think the last time I was on the show with you, Reef, we talked about that there was going to be a new update called Beyond Chapter 1, where they've added some new stuff into the game. You can now, so you could always wing up with your friends or random people, and you guys can fly together in a wing, or you can just be wherever you are in the galaxy. But you always knew where one of your three friends were in your wing of four. But now, you know, what would happen is you would get a mission, and your friends, like maybe you had, I've got to mine something, and you're out there in a mining ship and you're vulnerable to pirates. So you have your friend who has a really good combat ship come and protect you. Then you finish your mission and you don't make any, you know, the friend who's helping you doesn't make any money. You have no way of giving them money. And they have no way of earning any income outside of, you know, shooting any pirates or anyone that comes up against you if they have bounties, so they can raise some credits that way. But now there is a way for you to share your missions with your wing. So you can share one of the missions that you have with your wing, and they earn the same income on the mission that you would. So it really changes the paradigm of how you play the game, and it's really, really helpful. There have been a lot of changes to the game that make the game itself more accessible to more casual players. I wouldn't say the layperson, because no one that plays this game is a layperson.
And it's not a lay game,
right? But they're, you know, for people that play the game more casually, like as I look. I've played the game total. Now, the game's been out for 2 or 3 years. I've only got 10 days total in the game. Only 10
yeah
days.
I was like, only
right I've only played it for 250 hours. So I've played it for 10 days. I'm on, and on the Xbox, the great thing about the Xbox, you can compare your stats now and achievements and stuff like that against your friends and your friends list. I am 17th on the on my list of people who have played this game, of friends on my games, on my games list, who have played this game. The top person on my list has played 192 days.
Yo, okay, okay. They have to have the, does the, oh yeah, that's right. Xbox doesn't have any VR stuff, because I was about to say, they, I was like, they have to be in VR. Like, right, they gotta be in VR. Right. And like, they haven't left.
Right, they have not left. Right, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the game is for those people who, you know, as a, like a broken record, you know, if it scratches, it scratches a very specific itch. If you have that itch, and you really don't know if you have that itch until you experience it. But if you have that itch, there really isn't an experience like it. It is truly, truly remarkable. I absolutely love that game. Frontier Developments, holla at your boy, yo.
Now,
holla at your boy. David Braven, holla at your boy.
Is it possible to game that system at all that you mentioned? Yes. It sounds like you can just have people that say, hey, I'll give you a mission. I'll put you in my, what do you call it? The
wings.
In the wing. Just temporarily, I'll do a mission and you'll get the money.
Sure, can you do that? Yeah, you absolutely can. And there are things that happen in the game. And you know, another great thing about this game is the community. I was talking to a friend on the game the other day and was saying that, you know, most games, the amount of people, if you gauge the percentage of people that are active in forums and Reddit and what have you, it's probably like 2 or 3%, and that's probably on the high end of actual game players of that game. I would venture to guess for Elite Dangerous, that number is in the double digit percentages. You know, the people that play this game really, really love this game, and they really love the community and try and help people out. And so what happens is you wind up hearing about lots of different things within the game that are exploitive, if you will, where, you know, there are missions or there are trade runs that will allow you to make a lot of money. If you could be a space Uber driver. So for a while, there were these things called passenger missions that were doling out tons and tons and tons of money. So a lot of people did those things and made a bunch of money and got into really big ships, but didn't really know how to play the game. And that's the thing about this game, is that you can do things that make yourself earn a lot of income, but it really doesn't teach you how to play the game.
Right.
And so, like, you know, your ability to fly your ship, your ability to kit your ship out and do the things that you need to do in order to be successful in things outside of just buying the biggest and baddest ship, are determined and are earned in, and you kind of form those skills by playing the game. So there's no way for you to game your ability to be better in the experience of being a pilot in Elite Dangerous.
Okay.
Gotcha. And an engineer, and, you know, to be the Han Solo that Han Solo is. It really is a great experience.
I want to be the Donald Glover of the Solo. Yes. So I want to be.
Yes. Yeah. So, Mike and Throop in the chat was talking about, the flight model. Flight model, is really good. Yes, it is. It is impeccable. And there's a group, I've talked about them before. There's a group of human players that, you know, spawned up organically called the Fuel Rats, that have a website that goes across all the platforms, PC, PS4, and Xbox One. If you're out in space and you run out of fuel, you can go on the website and tell them, hey, I'm stranded, I need fuel. They're like Elite's version of AAA, and they will come to you and give you fuel. And they have their own special paint jobs. So you know, everybody in the game knows these guys are fuel rats. You shouldn't mess with them. Don't try and interdict them. Don't try to blow them up. Don't do any of that kind of stuff, because they're just out here helping people. And that's what they do. Like, these people play the game going around giving people, you know, interstellar jumps.
Yeah.
It's awesome. This game is amazing. I love it.
Yeah, it like reminds me of some of the role play servers that have sprung up for Grand Theft Auto, where you go on some of the multiplayer games and there's people that are just cab drivers, and they're in the role, and they say where you go, they drive you there, they have a conversation with you, they drop you off, and that's it. And there's people that are just working at stores, or you know, it's amazing. I mean, I just love how these big sandboxes that the devs make can like sometimes be just taken and used in a way that I'm sure that they might not have expected. It's great.
Yeah, it is. It is great. It makes when you can have these kind of buzzword alert, organic moments that are just naturally ingrained in these games. It makes for like spectacular, another buzzword alert, emergent types of gameplay experiences.
Nice.
Thank you, sir. Another game that has done much the same in a very different way has been the free-to-play game that has been a breakout hit on the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, and that game is Fortnite. More specifically, Fortnite Battle Royale, which has kind of taken the gaming world by storm and is competing head-to-head with its spiritual cousin or big brother or stepbrother or rival, depending on where you are, the Player Unknown's Battlegrounds. Fortnite from Epic Games had a very, very big night on this very own little channel called Twitch, twitch.tv. There was a big, big Fortnite player named Ninja who streams Fortnite on Twitch a lot. And you can play Fortnite in solo mode. You can play it in squads. You can play it 50. Well, you used to be able to play it 50v50. And you can play it co-op. And last night, Ninja was joined by someone north of the wall.
North of the wall.
North of the wall. He is every NBA player's best friend, according to him.
It's true.
You know, repping the six. He is the one and only Drizzy Drake. Drake joined Ninja to play some Fortnite, and the internet went a little bonkers, and so did Twitch, breaking records. They were over at its peak, over 600,000 people Drake and Ninja play some Fortnite, build some wooden stairs and shoot people in cartoon violence. It is crazy. It smashed the record by our good friend Dr. Disrespect. That was sarcasm.
Yeah, I was
there.
Like, your good friend, maybe.
Right. Our good friend Dr. Disrespect, who had I think 391,000 or somewhere along that lines, 380,000 viewers at his peak. When he returned back to playing PUBG, and I mean, they just destroyed that. And I think the average was well in the six figures. It was probably around 300,000 or 280,000 as the average for people that were sitting and watching Drake and Ninja have a blast playing Fortnite. Did you sit and watch any of it, Reef?
I did watch a bit of it. I did see Twitter absolutely losing its mind. And then I started getting my alerts that I have set up for CNN and MSNBC, they were all reporting on this.
Yes.
So this completely broke out of our normal sort of gaming sphere of Twitter and just completely took over for like a good hour, I would say.
Yes.
I heard all these tweets like, what is Fortnite? You know, I don't know what Fortnite is, but Drake is doing something, you know? So man, like, can Fortnite get any better advertising? Because I still don't think Fortnite or PUBG even are like really known outside of gaming, really. Like, they're not like a Call of Duty kind of game where
they haven't hit the zeitgeist in a way that makes them synonymous with, you know, they're not Madden, they're not 2K, they're like not World Call of Duty. Exactly. They're not those games where people just automatic, or Minecraft. They don't know those games yet outside of the gaming circles. Now, inside the gaming circles, very, very big, obviously. But the fact that Drake is a big, big fan of Fortnite, him and his crew, they play it a lot in the studio. He had been following Ninja for a little while, and Epic was able to get them together, and they were able to make magic happen, break records last night. What do you think this means for this tug of war, this battle, whether or not I watched the NoClip interview, amazing documentary, by our friend Danny O'Dwyer with, Brendan Green, aka Player Unknown, about PUBG itself and about himself and he really downplayed this rivalry between PUBG and Fortnite and PUBG and all of the other battle royale type of imposters but battle royale games that are out in the market. And he said, you know, look, we're games, we make games, you know, there's no rivalry, you know, you make a game, I make a game, and they're games, so let's just have fun and play the games. But what do you think that, so let's pretend he didn't say that, or let's ignore the fact that he said that and said that there is a rivalry. What do you think this does for Fortnite in the zeitgeist, in the rivalry between itself and PUBG?
Well, I think Fortnite definitely, as of late, has definitely had the buzz. I still think that PUBG, because, you know, obviously it costs money, it's still going to dominate from a business perspective, whereas the Battle Royale and Fortnite is free. But obviously they're going to plan all kind of stuff that you can buy for it. But I think that PlayerUnknown and Microsoft are sitting pretty pretty because they're getting a lot of money out of PUBG. I definitely agree in terms of the zeitgeist. Fortnite is, in terms of what people are streaming Fortnite. They're definitely streaming both in huge numbers. But Fortnite is, I think, the more exciting one. It's the one that I know that a lot of former big streamers of Destiny 2 have kind of migrated to. And events like this, I can guarantee you that there's going to be some other rappers and celebrities that are going to be like, hey, I want to trend for a few hours. I'm going to contact, DJ Knight or C's, who like plays a lot of like Fortnite. And like, I'm going to, you know, set up a match, you know. So I'd be really curious to see, like, you know, people's agents trying to contact some of these big dreamers and like get them to like play. I mean, we've like already seen a little bit of this when like EA tries to invite all these like celebrities and stuff to like a EA play to play like Battlefield and like 2K. Not 2K, NBA Live, and that kind of stuff. Right, but I think that this could really open up like an avenue of promotion, both for the game and the celebrity that's like streaming, even if they suck, you know. Our Captain Ka, he he like tweeted out like, you know, if you wanted to play Fortnite with a star, who would you play with? And there were just some great remarks, everything from like, you know, Obama to Chadwick Boseman and Lupita, you know, like, so right. like, yeah, right. I honestly think that this, you know, this can be a thing, you know?
Yeah.
But as I said before, I think the rivalry is a little overstated because PUBG is making the money. I don't think they care mm-hmm. if Fortnite is sort of the one that's like getting more of the attention as of now.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I mean, I think what it really boils down to, though, is esports, right? Like, esports is where all of this stuff is going to come to a head, and this is where it's all ultimately. This is where it's all leading, is to get into these tournaments with big money and sponsors and you know all that jazz and you know whether it be TV viewers, as we've already seen with Activision Blizzard was able to make a phenomenon out of the Overwatch League using their app. And using online stuff, so maybe you can forego TV and you can create your own app and do stuff that way. But I think ultimately that's where all of this stuff is turning. And it, you know, I wonder if the buzz around Fortnite, you know, first off, the barrier of entry is so much smaller for Fortnite. It's a free to play game. Well, at least, you know, the Battle Royale part. It's a free-to-play game. There are microtransactions so you can buy skins and stuff like that. But it doesn't change the way the game is played fundamentally. It just changes the aesthetic. So, you know, that barrier of entry is gone when the game is free. It's on three major platforms, PC, the Xbox One, and the PlayStation 4. So most people have one of those three platforms in their home, so they can go ahead and get it, as opposed to PUBG, which is only gold on the PC and on console is only available on the Xbox One. Is doing phenomenally well financially for Bluehole and for Microsoft and for Brendan Green, you know, the fact that so many people, especially since PlayStation is PS4 is still the number one home gaming console in the world. The fact that you can play Fortnite on that console makes the ability for it to be visible and to be repeatable in so many different ways, shapes and forms a great thing. Now, having said that, the fact that Microsoft has just announced cross-platform play with the PC on, now this may be a mistake, I don't know, you know, depending on how they do it, but cross-platform play with the PC and the Xbox One allows, you know, closes that bridge, narrows that bridge a lot for Fortnite players, and Sony, again, is still not participating in that kind of stuff. But that's a big win for Microsoft on that end. But it's still about getting that esports stuff down and getting it going.
Yeah, and like that again was what was so crazy about this was because the whole reason Drake was able to play with Ninja, and you know he claimed to be a fan of Ninja, like before this, is because the PC and PS4 have cross-platform play, which is brand new. Right. And I believe that Ninja's on a PC and Drake is on PS4. So not only was this, you know, a big advertisement for both of them, but for this new mode that they, man, I wonder if they planted this shit, man. you know, but even if they did, it's still cool, you know. You know, and also you forgot one platform that just launched today. Invite only iOS. So Fortnite Battle Royale is on iOS, and they are promising cross-platform play with the iOS version. I have no idea how that's going to work because you don't have buttons and like all that stuff. But like I read a few articles with like first impressions, and people are saying like, "Yo, this is the game. Like this is the console game." You know what I'm saying? This game is even though I'm not the biggest fan of it, I recognize why it's like catching on and stuff. But yeah, there is a iOS version of a Fortnite, and like it looks good, and supposedly it controls not bad either. And like it's on both the iPhone and the Pro. iPad. Yeah. You know, like obviously the textures are worse and all that stuff, of course.
Right.
But you can play the full game, and I'm telling you, if we get to the point where we're connecting to servers to play with Microsoft and PlayStation people from a phone, yo, that's crazy. Right. And that this is the game to do it is very impressive. So like that would get me to try out more of like Fortnite if I could boot it on my phone and ruin my data plan.
Right. Wow. Well, yeah. Well, I guess so. You know, you gotta switch to T-Mobile. It's truly unlimited data. They're not paying me to say that. Nobody's T-Mo. Paying me to say that. But you know, they holla at your boy. an aftermath to last night's Ninja Twitch stream is he made at least $25,000 last night based
what?
On
last night
the amount of subscribers the amount of subscribers that he received.
So new subscribers
subscribers,
because he already has a ton. I imagine, but holy I'm just seeing he added 900,000 followers on Twitch last night.
Yeah.
This is somebody that already is one of the top streamers around. Man, that's crazy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So congratulations to him, man. You know, that's a big deal. Fortnite's a great game. I love that there's this debate there. I mean, there was a debate internally between myself and our great Captain Khalif, who is not here, along with Cypher of Tear, who's in the chat, but they are both on their way to beautiful, foggy San Francisco for the Game Developers Conference. So if you are in the San Francisco area, look for them there. It's going to be a blast. And Kai will be hosting the Blacks in Gaming panel, or not even panel, event, sponsored by Microsoft yet again. So you know, real proud of my bro. And you know, Cypher's gonna be out there, and you never know what Cypher of Tears is gonna get into. Tanya, she be out there. You know, she's moving and shaking and always making things happen. If you are in the San Francisco area and stay close to Twitter and check things out, make sure you say what's up to them. Additionally, Fortnite's a great game. It's really great. It's great to have this rivalry going on. Great conversation. It like you were saying, Reef, it's not necessarily a game that you like, not necessarily a genre that you rock with too tough. But a genre I know that you do rock with real tough are the Telltale games. These story driven point and click games. I really love them. But there's kind of this conversation now saying like, hey, when The Walking Dead, the game, season one first release, it was a phenomenon. It was really a fantastic game, you know, gave everybody the feels, and it really kind of ironed down the style, this kind of cel shaded animated style that Telltale was trying to work out with some of their previous games, Jurassic Park. The game and Back to the Future, the game, but they got, you know, they got it right with The Walking Dead, and they've used that formula And essentially that engine, you know, has been tweaked and upgraded a few times, but over the last 4 years, basically. And it's starting to look a little long in the tooth. What do you think about the Telltale style? Do you think it's time for them to change? Do you think it's time for them to kind of shake things up and do something different?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, everything gets old eventually. I really do love these kind of games, but one thing I really loved about Don't Nod's Life is Strange is they added sort of the time travel element to it. So you could rewind decisions and like that kind of thing. So they added this extra mechanic to it. My hope for the Telltale style games is that they can integrate other parts of game of other mechanics that exist in games. And I think they're a little scared to like do that. Like, I would love to have something would say the production values of going through a first person area in say Doom or like Wolfenstein, and then get to a point where I have to have a conversation with like a someone and make some like decisions that affect the rest of the story. And then maybe I have to do some really cool platforming, right? Or some first person right. stuff. That's the kind of stuff that they don't have now. It's basically only the conversations, and then they have like these kind of puzzles where like you have to walk around the like environment and like figure out how things work together. I think you can have that stuff in there too, but I think that they've been shying away from some of the more action oriented like mechanics that they could put into their games. But I think they realize that it's, you know, that it's not their wheelhouse, and maybe they need to outsource that or like hire some people in
right.
that like know how to like tune a good jump or like how you walk or the feel of like different weapons. Right. You know, I think that that's something that really could take their games to the next level and have people that might not originally play Telltale games because they might think that they're these quote unquote kind of walking simulators. I think it would open it to people that like a little more, you know, things to do like mechanically in their games. I think if they don't do this, they're definitely in danger of their games becoming irrelevant soon. Even though I like them, I think that they're not going to engage the amount of people that they need to justify like I'm making them. And we know that like a Telltale already had some layoffs late last year around when Batman Enemy Within dropped. So they're already kind of like feeling the pressure. So I hope that they really try to revise things a bit. And hopefully that means to, you know, make them a little more mechanically diverse.
Yeah, well, what do you say to people that are like, well, you're fundamentally taking what was a point-and-click adventure and you're taking those point-and-click adventures away by adding all of these other action-oriented traits to these types of mechanics, to these titles? Doesn't that fundamentally change what they are, and doesn't that like keep it from being a point and click adventure, a game that is pretty much accessible to gamers and non-gamers alike?
Well, I don't think they need to stay within the bounds of point and click adventure. I think we're in a time where you don't have to be in one genre. Like, some of the more successful games are ones that blend parts from different genres and make something new. And I think that they could take the safe route and say, we're just going to make straight point and clicks. And that's where I think they'll run into some danger, because I don't know how long that market would be able to sustain them. But I think that if, like, they say, we're going to go out of the genre, take what we like from this, and then just create something that's like fun, that's not necessarily within the boundaries of an established genre, I think that's, you know, that would get me excited, you know. And like, I think it has the best chance of getting other people that have kind of checked out of the Telltale games excited as well.
So someone in the chat, let me see if I can. Oh, so Play Games Patty, as you were describing, like the platforming elements and some of the like first person elements and that kind of stuff, said, you know, basically, isn't that Mass Effect?
Yeah. I mean, I think Mass Effect does that very well. Then again, Mass Effect is a, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 hour opus that takes years to make. I'm not saying that they should make those kind of games, but I would love to see a game with the action and decision making of like Mass Effect that just like the Telltale games are like 5, you know, 2 hour episodes, right? There was, I know that, you know, there were supposed to be like these Half-Life episodic games that were supposed to come out that like never really did. I think that it's a huge opportunity that I hope that they can do, because otherwise I think that they're just going to keep on shedding people.
Yeah, well, it's funny. So so you're basically saying like keep the episodic portion of it, like that part is good. But now take what you've done, like, you know, and keep your storytelling elements because you guys are great at that. But now it's time to add some new mechanics. It's time to add some new elements to the things that you already do well, so that you guys can be more successful. And you know, to an extent, I understand. I completely understand exactly what you're saying. And the way I've treated Telltale is, and you know, and maybe this is part of the problem, is like, I know the formula, and I will invest in a game based on a property or a license that they have that I'm interested in. So if, you know, when they did Tales from the Borderlands, I was interested in that. And, you know, Walking Dead, I've never watched the show. I think I've seen like one episode ever. But I've really enjoyed those games. They were great. I had never heard of The Wolf Among Us, even though I'm a comic book fan. So being able to play in that world was great. But then Tales from the Borderlands was phenomenal. Game of Thrones was really good. And you know, and the Batman games have been great. I haven't played Guardians yet, and I would love to play Guardians. But it is one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, I'm not, you know, I've never played the Minecraft, Tales of Minecraft or whatever that's called, because I know I don't play Minecraft. Are we supposed to dip in and out, or are we supposed to want to buy everything that Telltale makes because you know that Telltale makes great games?
I think they need to change it up. In the same way that the last episode we talked about what Call of Duty needed to do to re-engage people. Now, they're always going to make the money, right? So it's hard to make the argument because they're going to sell out either way. But, you know, I'm speaking as a gamer and as a fan of the industry and the creativity that I know is there. And for me personally, I'm like, you guys have been making this too long. Like, you guys got to change it up a bit. And I think that at this point, Telltale has been making these games for a while now. Basically the same engine. Basically the same games, just skinned over with these new licenses. And yeah, I could definitely see myself disengaging from it a bit, even if the games are not bad. Like, I've never played a bad Telltale game yet. Like, they've all been good to me. Some have been better than others, but I can't say that like any have been awful. But they do need to keep up that excitement. And for me as a fan, I want to see them do different things. And I'm sure that those devs want to be doing different things as well, because like they want to be challenged and do different things as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's find out what Bricago thinks. Obviously, you know that you can reach out and talk to us. So we want to know. We want to know what you guys think. So please let us know either via Twitter or email, or, you know, give me a call. I don't know. Send me a text.
Just like a personal call.
Right. Yeah. Hey. Yeah, so it's time now to give props, to go, as Reef talked about time traveling, it's time to go way back in time to January 2017 to our prediction show, where Reef made a prediction about Microsoft and what they were going to do with E3 for this E3. 2018. And Reef, I will allow you at this point to be Reef Stradamus. Tell people, if you remember, tell people sure. what you said. I think I basically kind of said it. And then talk about what Microsoft has done.
So my prediction was that, you know, either Microsoft or Sony would not be at E3 in their traditional capacity, meaning that they won't have their big booth set up and they won't have their sort of like big stage presence, essentially, like that most of them would kind of go like the way of Nintendo, meaning like Nintendo has a huge presence at like E3, like their booth is enormous, they got salespeople all around, but they don't, you know, have their conference and they don't kind of do that stuff. And we know that like both Bethesda and Electronic Arts have kind of, you know, moved out of the convention center and sort of set up their own big things that where they host their own fans and they do that stuff. So this week, Microsoft said that, you know, they're moving their entire presence for Xbox out of the E3 convention center into LA Live, which is like sort of a conglomerate mall that's like across the street from the LA convention center, so they're still like steps away, but they're not in the mix in the big convention center. Now they are gonna have like their big mixer booth still in the exhibit hall, but they're moving everything to LA Live. So it's essentially exactly what Electronic Arts did when they moved all their stuff over to Hollywood, and like now they have.
Right. Well, first to LA Live with EA Play was in LA Live 2 years ago. Right.
Yes. And like they have this cool like 3-day event where you can go and you can fully absorb into the world of like Electronic Arts, and it feels cool. And like they can curate the message and the people and all that stuff. So like they're still having like their briefing at the Microsoft Theater. Right. But they won't be on the convention center floor. So I feel like I should give myself partial credit because, you know, it's not a I didn't hit it on the head, but I still think it was a damn good job. I'm just saying.
It was a damn good job. And, you know, much to my chagrin, I got to give you props, man. I got to give you props because even when we talked about the predictions from last year in this year's prediction show, I laughed at you, said they'll be at E3. I did. and you know, and you turned out to be right. So congratulations, sir. Well done. I didn't believe it. But what do you think, you know, your prediction aside, what do you think of this move? What do you, you know, since we're all, for the very first time, For the very first time, Sharif, Khalif, and myself will be in the same place at the same time, and for all the worlds will collide because for the very first time, Sharif, Khalif, myself, and Tanya will be together for the very first time. What do you think? So at E3. And since we're covering it, what do you think of this move? How difficult do you think it's going to make it to properly cover E3 in this way? So, you know, so you've got the LA Convention Center, you've got things going on at LA Live, and then you've got the EA Play event that's going to be happening someplace else. You know, what do you think of all of this stuff happening, but Microsoft specifically?
I think this is the future. I think EA can get away with it because their event is before E3 proper, so it's before the convention center opens. So as like press, we go, we do all our EA interviews and like all that stuff, and then we're done with EA. And then like obviously there's still EA games on the convention floor because they have a ton of games. So like their games show up, you know, at the Sony section, but now not at the Microsoft section because that'll be at LA Live. But there'll definitely be EA stuff at the Sony and like a Nintendo booth. So like, you know, with the Xbox thing, it's going to be a little challenging because as I understand this, they're not like EA Live where they're having it before it. This is during E3 when the convention center is open, meaning it's going to be a big challenge for us covering because usually we have a list of appointments and they're not quite back to back, but they're definitely pretty close. Right. So that means if we book our Microsoft stuff, we got to make sure we have enough time to leave LA Live, go to the convention center and then go to our next appointment. You know, so I think that it's definitely going to be a logistical challenge for us that are covering the event. I think that for the people from the public that are going, I think they're going to love it. Like there's going to be nothing but Microsoft fanboys up in LA Live, you know, and they have their space where they don't have to go anywhere else. You know what I'm saying? Everything they want is like right there. So it'll be interesting. I hope it loosens up the congestion on the convention center floor a little bit.
I hope so.
Because last year was a bit of a mess. But I think, I think this is the future, man. I think that, you know, Microsoft sees that, like Nintendo is still able to galvanize the attention and like do that stuff when they have good stuff out, obviously, even though they don't have sort of a similar presence. So I think that like Microsoft said, hey, we got the clout, like Bethesda, EA and stuff to move our stuff off site. Like we're Microsoft, you know, and then we can control everything. You know what I'm saying? And that's like what they're doing. I think it's a great move. I guarantee it's not a prediction show, but I guarantee Sony will follow them within 2 years.
Wow. Within 2 years.
Within 2 years. So either 2019 or 2023, if E3 is still around.
So with the release of the PS5,
they're going to build a fucking building the shape of a PS5.
Right, whatever that thing is going to look like, the first iteration of it, whatever kind of monstrosity that is. So you actually ended on a really interesting point. What do you think that means for the future of E3? And I, you know, obviously, I guess I'll give a portion of that right now, but you know, I guess we'll kind of get a sense. We'll be able to taste the temperature of feel the temperature of the water when we're there this year. But what do you think, you know, right here, right now, today is going to be the fate of E3 as a result of something like this happening?
I think E3 is fine. I mean, like just cause Microsoft isn't paying for the convention space. Like I think that the money that they're getting in from the public attendees is hopefully enough. I mean, I haven't heard anything about them having trouble attracting people, and those ticket prices are, you know, pretty decent for people to show up. I do think that the relevance of it is really going to come down to, you know, if people really stop having the events around E3 time, meaning the press conferences. I mean, like Nintendo has a direct during that time, but technically they can have a direct anytime. Sony already has their like a PlayStation Now conference. They could just have their annual thing there if they wanted to. And Microsoft could do the same thing, and then they can own the news cycle for that time. They don't have to compete for one day of news stuff. You know, so I think that once that happens, that's when I think E3 is going to kind of go down the tubes a bit. And there's no real sign of that happening yet. But I do think that, you know, as I said, I think Sony is going to move like their stuff into their own Sony land somewhere.
Right.
You know,
Sony World.
Yeah. And like, you know, the, right. the convention center are just going to be people selling controllers.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, people selling controllers, a lot more space for indie developers. Maybe it also frees up a space for AA titles, potentially. So, you know, as those indie games gain some steam and momentum, maybe that, you know, maybe that's something that happens. And, you know, we'll be able to see them get more exposure, rightfully so. And like you said, they're, you know, for peripherals and accessories and whatever the new weird wonky thing is, whether it be VR or AR or you know, whatever it is, you know, who knows what it's going to be, you know, new cloud technologies, you know, whatever it is, maybe that's where that's what's going to occupy the space in E3 going forward. But I definitely think you're right that you know, the what E3 was is changing, you know, not necessarily for the better or for the worse, but what you thought E3 was is changing, and it's not going to change back. So, you know, it's interesting. And you know, speaking of changing, Ubisoft has done something that was really that's really unique with a title that came out around this time last year, or actually about a month, 13 months ago, For Honor. They've released what's called the For Honor Starter Kit for only $14.99. Mm-hmm. So this is like, it's like For Honor Lite?
No, so the cool thing about it is it's the full game. The only difference is that it doesn't come with all of the playable characters that you can play against. And there's different classes and like that kind of stuff. So this is very similar to the Rainbow Six Siege Starter Edition, which was a limited time thing for the PC, which I bought. I believe it was 15. Okay. I forgot how much it was. It was 15 or like a $20. Once again, the full game, but you only get a few of the operators, which if you're really into the game, having a few of the operators sucks because you really need to learn how to play the shield and offense and defense and stuff. Similarly with like a For Honor, it really does impact the game a lot if you're really into it. But for the people that are not really into it, that just want to check it out or that want to play it on a casual basis, this opens up a huge market.
Right.
Huge market. So I think this is incredible. I really, really, really think that more, well, I really, really hope I should say that more companies look at these other price points, and see what they can do to release their games, you know, at this point where it's the full game, but it might not have all of the customizations, you know, like I can play, I can buy Overwatch for like $10 and like only have maybe like five heroes in it. You know, it might sound like it sucks.
Right.
I think that sucks for me personally, but to somebody that like had never wanted to invest the money said, oh, I can jump in at 10 and like, see if I like it. And if I like it, I can upgrade to the full version. This is awesome. I mean, we need more variety in price points. And I think that,
absolutely,
Ubisoft is doing a great thing here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. And it definitely does. As someone in the chat, shout out to Puscums, said that the initial game seemed promising, but it wasn't balanced correctly, and it drove them away. I think this gives another opportunity, kind of like what I was talking about with Elite Dangerous, giving someone who is a little bit more casual, was interested in the premise of a game, to experience the game, you know, above and beyond a beta or a trial or something to that effect, without having to spend the full price on that game. And And what it does for me as a person who bought the game when it launched, it gives me kind of incentive to go back and try to, you know, experience it again for essentially the first time. Just much like lots of other Ubisoft games that came out last year and the year before with games like Rainbow Six Siege, where, you know, Siege, I think, was fantastic essentially from the jump, you know, minus the internet problems that always happens with Ubisoft titles. But games like The Division and the horribly racist Ghost Recon Wildlands, they continue to support those games despite the fan base and the community dropping off, and they found something that really worked, and the community came back, and I think The Division is really starting to see a new resurgence as a result of all the things that they've added to that game. So I would love to see For Honor, because I think that the premise of For Honor is fantastic, and being able to see more people come in and play that game and experience that game, you know, could potentially give that game new life. That would be really wonderful.
Yeah, and like it fits For Honor well specifically because the reason a lot of people dropped off, including me, even though I was super hype on the game when it first came out, right, was they had just massive, massive server issues that they honestly did not fix until recently, you know, when they finally rolled out some like dedicated servers on the PC and the console side. So now they're kind of throwing a bone and say, hey, our like online works. You can jump in at a low price point, and if you like it, upgrade it. If you don't, cool. You know, I think a lot of people are willing to gamble a bit on $15 as opposed to 60. So yeah, I'm a fan of this. Like I hope to see this more.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think unfortunately what we'll see is, well, I mean, I guess whenever it happens, you know, a game, even a game that was released a long time ago, if you're playing it for the first time, is still new to you. So, my fear is that we'll only start to see this type of stuff with games that don't do well initially, or, you know, it'll be 12 or 18 months into the life of a title before we start to see these types of deals. I would love to see this type of model be introduced with a game. I think they would see even more sales if there was a pricing model that allowed for players to determine how much of the game they wanted to get while still getting the full game. But you know, we'll see how that works going forward. I think it's awesome. And again, I'll say it again, guys. We want to know what you guys think. Obviously we love talking to ourselves. We love talking to you. We want you guys to talk to us. So let us know what you think. Would you like to see this type of model? What type of models would you like to see? Run the gamut from free to play to $90 for a premium game. Speaking of which, like God of War has three different versions that are like $100. There's like some goofy digital version, and then MLB The Show 18 has some digital versions that are $100 or more. Oof. One comes with one you can get from GameStop that comes with, it's a digital copy of the game.
Does it come with an NBA player?
But it comes with a Aaron Judge New Era Yankees hat.
Okay.
So I mean, that'll sell well in New York, and it'll sell well for Yankees fans, but I don't think it'll sell well for anybody else, because most other, I mean, either you're a Yankee fan or you hate
pretty
the Yankees.
Much.
You fucking hate them. So
there's not much of a middle ground with that team.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, maybe people will buy that and you know, try to put the roots on Judge or something like that. Don't do that, please, Aaron Judge. yeah. So I mean, what do you guys think? Where's that sweet spot? Do you think there is a sweet spot, or does it really depend on what's going on? We want to hear from you. And you can start. We can start hearing from you right now, because we have come to the end of yet another episode of Spawn on Me. So, Reef, I've been talking to the people about talking to us. If they want, as I do my Captain Kirk impression, if they want to talk to us, how should they do it?
So, man, they should hit us up first and foremost at the website spawnon.me that has links to everything, including archive of the shows, bios, all our pretty faces, our abilities, all that stuff is awesome. Also on Twitter, at spawnonme, we're fairly active on there as well. And on Facebook, we throw up the episodes there as well. Spawnonme on Facebook. If you're listening to the audio version of this, which comes out every Tuesday, remember that we stream these live every Thursday, 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 Eastern, at twitch.tv/spawnonme. So if like you want to look us dead in the eyes and say, "I see you, son, I see you," like I'll see is freaking you out right now. If you want to be freaked out by Stubby Stan, you can come live on Thursdays. Also for people that want to go above and beyond with their support of us and the show, make sure to go to our Patreon at patreon.com/spawnonme, we're up to over 100 patrons, which is awesome.
That's amazing. Thank you.
And
so
right
much.
Now we're looking for some help on our travel to make sure we can go to the cons that we want to. Without putting us at too much of a financial disadvantage. So every dollar helps. Donate a buck, donate $5, donate $10, donate $1,000,000. It's yes. All up to you. And you also get access to our premium podcasts, Spawn on Me After Dark, and the Brookago Beltway, our political show, which we just had a fantastic episode with Eljoy Williams. Yes. Sunday Civics. So make sure to check that out as well. And that's it.
All right. So before we get out of here, I want to send a very, very special shout out to my coworker, because I told him I would do this, Pasquale Cara, who serenaded me for my birthday, which happens to be tomorrow. Fits in between the Ides of March and St. Paddy's Day. For lunch today, he serenaded me with a happy birthday.
Beautiful.
It was something. It was something. I will say, if you guys want to see it, go to YouTube. I didn't do this. He did it. It is public. He posted it. Go to YouTube and search for "Happy Birthday, Mr. Cicero." It is 1 minute of your life that you can't get back, but it's a minute of your life that you won't want back. Enjoy it, and hopefully he gets a lot of views as a result of that, and you can check that out there. So thank you very much, Pass, and thank you very much, Bleep Nick, for the birthday wishes. I really appreciate it. Here we are. This is episode 212 of the Spawn on Me podcast. For the absent and traveling, safe travels, of course, to our Captain Khalif Adams, to the Duchess of Diversity, Tanya DePass, for them, and for my brolic brother up north, Mr. Sharif Jackson, I am Cicero Holmes. We are the Spawn on Me podcast, and we say, hey.
Peace, y'all.